Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm shifters are people who are making a difference in the collective at this time on our planet, this time of the great shift. And I'm very excited to have a special guest on tonight. Of course, all my guests are special, but Jonathan Goldman is a sound maestro, a sound purveyor that has made a huge difference for a lot of us in all aspects of consciousness. So welcome to the show, Jonathan Goldman.
Well, thank you so very, very much, Veronica.
And I'm excited about you have a new book. First of all, I want to say Chakra Chants got me through an incredibly difficult period of my life. Chakra Chants, for those of you listening who don't know it, it's a really amazing, I think it's all human voices, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it takes you through the chakras with so many levels. And when I was going through a hard time, I used to just lie there and go through it day after day, or, you know, not all day every day, but some parts of every day. It really made a difference. And that's not to say that's the only one you've done, but that's the one that really turned my crank years ago. Now, the latest one is called The Divine Name, The Sound That Can Change the World. And you've got this wonderful book with an instructional CD that I've been working with as well. So, The Divine Name, where does that come from, Jonathan?
Where does that come from? Okay, that is, The Divine Name is actually a term, I probably did not make that one up, but it's what I call the sound that I, for want of a better term, discovered or was revealed to me about 15 years ago, and this sound sounds strikingly like the personal name of God from the Old Testament, which is, of course, the foundation of the three Abrahamic traditions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. It's really referred to as being the Tetragrammaton, also known as a Greek word for the four-letter name of God. But in reality, Veronica, when I discovered it purely as vowel sounds, as this universal sound that everyone could use to experience resonance in their chakras.
Well, so it's also kind of like the word made flesh, right? Isn't that kind of a core vibrational or resonance that can move through us on all levels?
You know, this is certainly, you know, very, very true. I would definitely, I do perceive that this may be, if not the word, or a sound, actually, because one of my suppositions in the book is that if this is indeed the word, quote, that was written in the Bible as the name of God, okay, it's not very effective. But as a sound, it's incredibly effective. In other words, if we say the word, it's not very effective. But if we intone it, it becomes magnificent.
And how would you explain that?
Why that happens?
Yeah.
Don't have a clue.
I'm being kind of cheeky because when you say that, I'm sort of thinking, like you said, it gets the resonance going in the chakras. And I'm going, yeah, there's something about the long tone, isn't there?
Yes, well, there certainly is. And once again, okay, so I'm going to backtrack a little bit and just say that probably 15 years prior to my having, if you like, discovered this sound, I've been working with sound as a healing modality. This is very, very early in the 1980s, to such a degree that I had actually got a degree, a master's degree from Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, researching the uses of sound music for healing. Mm-hmm. And one of my major areas of study was the relationship of sound to the chakras. And as your listeners may know, the chakras are these etheric energy fields located along the center of the body, probably the most well-known. I say most well-known simply because if Oprah can talk about it, then you figure people know about it. It's the heart chakra located at the center of the chest, or at the top of the head is the crown center. And for people who don't know about this, just think of a picture of a saint or a holy person with a halo, and that's usually a depiction of a activated crown center. So there are seven of these, if you like, energy centers that the word chakra comes from the Hindu tradition, and it means spinning wheel. But in reality, these spinning wheels of energy are found in all sorts of different traditions all over the planet and all sorts of different spiritual traditions, even including the Judeo-Christian tradition. So it's not like they're just limited as a belief system to the Hindu tradition. They're simply energy.
Well, and where were you as a child? Were you brought up in the Hebrew tradition, and were you aware of all this kind of thing?
Okay, I was brought up in the Hebrew tradition, but somehow I actually, you know, I think that I had a really deep relationship to the divine even when I was very young. I was, you know, perhaps a, you know, what would be now called an indigo or something like that. And so I remember going to Hebrew school, actually, and trying to learn Hebrew, and the kids kind of goofing around, and I took this very seriously because this was very, very real to me. And so I actually sort of, for quite a while, had really nothing to do with Judaism per se. I was bar mitzvahed when I was 13 years old, and that was, you know, mostly it. Then I just basically got into playing rock and roll, and that became my, if you like, salvation. But I continued having very, very mystical and extraordinary experiences, particularly during the times of the late 60s, early 70s, when people were beginning to explore consciousness. Then in the very, very late 70s, had this remarkable experience when I was playing in a club and basically guided to begin to explore using sound and music for healing modality. And as I did that, that was the thing that sort of clicked me into another gear. And I literally began then exploring any system and any tradition that worked with sound for healing. And the reality is that if you get into the, for want of a better term, the esoteric aspect of every tradition on this planet, you will find that almost everyone has an understanding that light, the universe, and everything was created through sound. So sound is mystical in all these different traditions. In the beginning was the Word. And the Lord said, let there be light, sound creating light. In the Hindu tradition, in the beginning with Brahman, with whom was the Word, and the Word was Brahman. From the Mayan tradition, in Popol Vuh, the first real men and women are given power solely through the Word. Veronica, I could go on and on, just, you know, going through history and you know, geography, and saying this tradition believes that and this tradition, but basically it's a fairly common concept in the various spiritual traditions. And what I find very, very interesting is that, of course, the ancient mystics had this understanding that everything was sound, and now our quantum physicists are also talking to us that everything is sound. And they're giving it the name super string theory, but it doesn't matter. Everything is in a state of vibration. If it's in a state of vibration, it's conceptually putting out a sound. So there we have that concept. And then the idea that, you know, I was, you know, checking out the relationship between the chakras and sound from Lesley University, and literally had dozens and dozens and dozens of different systems. And what appealed to me most was a system using vowel sounds to resonate the chakras. And the reason I really liked the vowel sounds was simply that vowels are non-denominational. They're found in every tradition, and yet at the same time, they're considered sacred in many of the different traditions. So they're, like, you know, they're non-denominational, and yet they are trans-denominational because they go across all these different traditions. So we have the vowel sounds, and then I distinctly remember the date. It was March 21st, 1986. I was in a state of deep meditation, and I basically received a particular system of using the chakras to resonate the vowels. Now, Veronica, in no way am I the first person to work with chakras and vowels. And in fact, you've probably heard of Edgar Cayce.
Yeah.
You know, the sleeping prophet. Yep. And he talked about the fact that the ancient Egyptian priests had knowledge of the seven sacred vowel sounds to resonate their energy centers. So I'm sure that this goes back many millennia ago.
Can I just throw you back into your research? Because it's very interesting that you were doing research with chakra and sounds. What kind of what were you doing when you first initiated your research project there?
I would just go to every esoteric bookstore on the planet and buy whatever book or CD existed, of which, and let me tell you, in the early 80s, there was hardly anything. Mm-hmm. I say that to you now because this week in Woman's World magazine, there's actually an article on how to heal yourself with sound featuring a little excerpt from my previous book, The Seven Secrets of Sound Healing.
Oh, you're kidding.
So it's really hitting mainstream, but close to 30 years ago, there was very, very little. But what happened for me was that I founded something called the Sound Healers Association, and that brought musicians, scientists, healers, etc., from throughout the planet to freely give of their time and energy of, with regard to using sound as a healing modality. And because of that, I literally became the conduit for all sorts of esoteric information on sound, which then said, wow, there's so much on this. Let me get this degree. So perhaps on the planet I have, at the time at least, more collected information on sound and the chakras and also sound to resonate the different organs and stuff like that. So, it really came from many, many, many different sources, not just one book, but from very, very, private individuals, private collectors, et cetera, et cetera.
Have you been working with actual healing with people like back then? Did you work on individuals?
That actually was my focus back then, was actually individual healing. It's so interesting that you should ask that because it's really not my focus right now, and I'm going to tell you why.
Good. I want to know why.
Simply because I basically either had the choice of opening up a practice and doing one-on-one with people, which, I may have some talents in that, or becoming, shall we say, a purveyor of awareness of sound healing. And I just was, guided to, share awareness and do education. And we do a training in, catch the name of the place, Loveland, Colorado. In Loveland, Colorado, we do a 9-day healing sounds intensive, and I teach people this. So I have literally thousands and thousands of students who teach, techniques and information that I have. But I'm so busy, I barely have time to, answer my emails and, do this and that. So I obviously couldn't have a practice. But thankfully, there are many, many gifted people. Anyway, I'm going to get back to my story of
It's still interesting because I like to know you have hitched into the individual, just so you can guide us on that, too.
Oh, for sure. And, mostly I will say that my greatest laboratory has been myself.
Right. Oh, boy, I know that one.
And, that doesn't mean, in my book, The Seven Secrets of Sound Healing, which has seven secrets, and the first one is that everything is vibration, and the second one is that intent is powerful, and perhaps we'll talk a little bit about intent. And I think, the third or the fourth one is that we are all unique vibratory beings, meaning that I, don't think that what works for one person is going to work for everyone. But still, I like to see if something works for me, because if something works for me, then I'll at least go, well, it works for me. Such as when I did Chakra Chants, I did that for myself. I literally took a lot of different systems that seemed to be contrary to each other for resonating the chakras and thought, well, what will happen if I put this all together? What would it sound like? And I said, oh, wow, I really like this. And then other people said, oh, wow, I really like this. So I thought, okay, if it works for me, that's the main thing. And then the fact that it works for other people, that's even better. Anyway, getting back to the vowel sound, okay?
Yes.
So I got a specific, shall we say, just a slight tweaking of of the vowels to resonate the chakras on this, a spring equinox in 1986, and I then began teaching it. And one thing I have to say, Veronica, is that I was, and I really am grateful for this. I will now go to different websites, and people will have a particular system of chakras and vowel sounds, and it is the one that I created. I'm usually not credited, which is fine, because it simply just means that they have worked with this and found it valid, because in my first book, Healing Sounds, I actually present a number of different systems that use vowel sounds to resonate the chakras, including Goldman system. I remember I called it that. That was in my book, Healing Sounds. And anyway, I had been teaching going from the root chakra to the crown chakra.
Right.
Going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. From the base of the spine to the top of the head. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. For probably 10 to 15 years. Now, I awakened from this dream, and as I awaken from this dream, I am told, we want you to sound the vowels from the crown center to the root center, back up to the crown. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Veronica, I have to tell you, I was so, if you like, indoctrinated with going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I couldn't do it. I literally had to walk over to a desk, pick up a pen, a piece of paper, write down the vowels 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then put them in that order 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then after that, I sounded it. Two things happened. The first I expected, and that was that I basically felt the energy go from the top of my head to the base of my spine, to the root chakra, and then back up the top of the head. I expected this because, it makes sense. If you're going to, if the vowel sounds will work one way energetically, if you sound them, they should work always. But the other thing that happened was just totally unexpected, and it floored me, and it was that as I was making this sound, I heard because once again, I am a sonic esotericist, and
that's a good name. I like that.
I've actually never said that word before, so I hope
wonderful.
I can remember it.
We have it on recording here.
Yes, and
on global radio.
Right, indeed. So we give thanks for that. So being a sonic esotericist, I knew of this sacred personal name, the divine name. I knew of it, but I'd actually, never heard it. Nobody, it actually had become lost. We can talk about this later, but it became suppressed and prohibited and then lost and forgotten for over 2,500 years. And yet I made the sound and I heard it in the sound. And as soon as I was done, I really felt like I discovered or rediscovered something really important. And I knew it was the most, and for me, it was, sonically, it was the most powerful experience that I'd had.
Do you mean it was emerging in behind the sound or emerging through the fields of the sound?
Well, you know what? We have a little excerpt of my sound, making this sound, and your listeners can basically hear it, and they'll hear perhaps, it's biblically written as the name Yahweh. But okay. Once again, as we said, the word has very little, if any, power, any more than any other word would have. But the sound, let's listen to the sound
okay.
of the divine name.
Something that has really touched my heart chakra this time.
It's a very powerful sound, and really after you hear it, the best thing to do is be in silence. But of course, we can't do that because this is radio, and
you
know,
off stage.
Right? You know, silence is in this case not golden on the radio. So we, but
silence is Goldman.
Goldman, right?
But I do feel my body feels way bigger, like a chamber, now that we've listened to that, you know?
Well, I initially made... That comes from the instructional CD that accompanies the Divine Name book.
Mm, that's a wonderful CD.
But thank you very much. And there's also a CD that I created with my friend Greg Braden, called The Divine Name, which is a music CD. They're not the same. And so if, you know, people go, oh, you know, what's the difference? Well, one is a separate music CD. The other is an instructional CD. Because when I was guided to create this book, and really there was a major amount of spiritual divine guidance with it, it was with the purpose of creating a vehicle, a tool for people to actually learn to make the sound themselves, because hearing the sound is extraordinary. I could, you know, spend the rest of our time together just telling you stories that have been related to me about the healing and transformative power of listening to this. But to make the sound yourself is literally life-changing.
Mm-hmm. I really feel like it's amazing in my body still from that little... Well, we'll hear from listeners as well after this show and see what they're experiencing. But I felt a real change inside of my body.
Well, there are those who believe that even listening to the sound will sort of do something on a cellular structure, perhaps even affecting your DNA. So I really want to acknowledge the power of listening to it, but I know, that a lot of people, once they've learned to make the sound, and it's not that difficult to learn how to make it, but once they've learned how to make this sound, something is very, very, very different for them for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do want to say, just as a suggestion, because I know when people listen to, you know, this or, you know, that was, of course, me sounding the divine name.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things, well, you know, gee, you know, you're a musician or you're a sound guy, and it's great that you can do that, but, you know, most people can't. No, the reality is everyone can. Because we're not talking, Veronica, about getting up in front of an audience
mm-hmm.
and singing Strangers of the Night or Star Spangled Banner or whatever the latest pop song is. That is performance art, and that's entertainment. That's great. I love to be entertained. But we're talking about frequency shifting, which is actually, if you like, called in physics, the term is entrainment, which means changing the vibrational rate of something. So we're talking about entrainment rather than entertainment, and you do not need to be able to carry a tune in a bucket or whatever metaphor you want to use. Everyone has got a voice, and everyone, simply by going, oh, or E, you know, it doesn't have to be real melodic, but working with the techniques in the book, you literally can learn to resonate your chakras, you can learn to resonate the parts of your body, and you can learn to create and sound the divine name and create and have a hotline to the divine.
So it's really evoking the divinity within, eh?
I would certainly agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting. I've done a little radio recently because of the book, and you know, one question that came up that I had no answer to is, well, why were you chosen to, receive this? And I have absolutely no answer. But I'll tell you something interesting is the fact that a few weeks ago, I was on my way to a place called Yogaville, which is a wonderful spiritual ashram in Virginia, where they have actually a structure called the Lotus Temple that's almost like the Taj Mahal.
Wow.
Very few people know about it. It's brilliant. And as I on my way there, I received this information that if anyone asks why this information is being revealed now, tell them that things have changed. and that we need the divine name in order to restore balance onto the planet.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay.
Well, that makes an awful lot of sense. I want to ask you this, which you spoke earlier about how we're all vibrational beings. No, we were talking about the string theory and so on. Do you think that this is a very good tool for establishing that that the pure, true self-identity of our own vibrational nature?
No question about it. But I would like to suggest, it's interesting, that we're not just talking about a sound here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody were, we're talking, all right, so my book, The Divine Name, and I'll just direct people immediately, if they want to find out more information, go to thedivinename.com. You can get the book at Amazon and all these other places, but thedivinename.com has got some stuff. Just wanted to share that immediately. But the book is divided into three sections. The first part talks about my discovery of the sound and how it became validated. The second part talks about the power of sound in terms of actually, you know, how, you know, the science behind it, et cetera. And then the third part is it's like an instructional part, and it allows, that's where the CD, which is an instructional CD and an interactive instructional CD, comes into play. And I just like to suggest that it's so very, very important to be able to feel and experience the resonance and the vibration of these different vowel sounds in your body and your chakras, because otherwise, even if you could mimic the divine name perfectly, it would have little effect, because it would be a little bit like eating a piece of plastic fruit, where in order to get the entire...
Not very juicy.
No, you know, and there wouldn't be any nutrition. In order to get the real effect, you not only make the sound, but you need to feel the resonance in your body. And what I found so interesting is that this one person did a description of the Tetragrammaton as being the name that brought spirit into matter and then back into spirit. And I thought this is so interesting, because going from the crown to the root and back up is exactly that.
Mm-hmm. And so you did start doing it. As soon as you got that message, you began to intone that way to make the sound?
Yes, and I've been doing it now for 15 years, and it still is the most powerful sound that I've ever experienced. And I've worked with mantras from almost every tradition that you can imagine, and I love them, and they're all very, very different, but this is the one that really seems, and when I teach it to people and have taught it to people, they too go, wow, you know, it's, you know, this is it. And, you know, my purpose once again for teaching it is to basically connect people to the divine, but ultimately so that we as a species can begin to work together sonically so we can change the vibratory field of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
First, let's start with ourselves, but then, you know, work with the planet. The actual last two sentences of the Divine Name book are, we heal the planet, we heal ourselves. We heal ourselves and we heal the planet. It's our choice. And I really, really know that on a collective level, we can work together with conscious, intentionalized, co-created sound and make shifts and changes that will create the miraculous.
I love that. You know, this is going to be a funny sidebar here, but you talked about being in the rock world.
Yes.
In the 60s, 70s. And, you know, we watched Woodstock just a couple of years ago. And this is the first time, because I work with the frequencies a lot. But it's the first time I had realized, at least the way I understood it, and maybe you can illuminate this a little bit, that that wild music of, for example, Jimi Hendrix and so on, literally broke through some of the fields of our society. It's like, to me, they often look like vibrational veneers, but I hadn't seen it before. It's like it like ripped it so that we were more available to be more expanded. Would you see it that way, or do you think I'm wrong?
Woodstock was the first vibrational shift on the planet after the Second World War. I am wearing a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt.
Yay!
I attended Woodstock. Yoga Ashram, Yogaville that I just mentioned,
yes,
was founded by Swami Satchidananda, who was the guru who led 500,000 people chanting together at Woodstock. And my wife, Andy, and I had the privilege of giving satsang to the entire community on Saturday night. And I basically began by saying, I was at this gathering where this, white-bearded man led 500,000 people chanting, and I'm still trying to get back there. So it's interesting that you mention. I actually did a radio show on Woodstock being the first vibrational shift, and I really...
Oh, wonderful. Wow.
You know, and I believe that part of it was because we all, you know, became attuned together through chanting of Swami Satchidananda. I literally believe that. We basically all began to resonate together, creating a field. None of the other, major festivals had that, and none of the other major festivals had, shall we say, the positivity and the influence and the effect of Woodstock.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Thank you. But I just want to go back to this thing about Jimi Hendrix, for example, and probably Janis Joplin, and we could go through a number of them. I think they literally tore that vibrational fabric that was maybe confining us. That's how I saw it. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
Well, I like to tell people that I was schooled in the Jimi Hendrix venue of broadcasting.
Yay.
And
that's a stairway to heaven, isn't it?
Well, you know, without getting too out there, he literally changed the very fiber and essence of Sonics as we know it today.
Yes.
There were two basic beings or people or groups. One was Jimi Hendrix and the other was the Beatles. But Hendrix molded and changed the fiber of sound. There were things that he did that had never been done before, as did the Beatles. And of course, it was so funny because, I must sound like I'm a repetitive record. Also, on the way to Yogaville on my iPod, I was listening to first Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the song by the Beatles, followed by Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the song that Jimi Hendrix did to honor the Beatles. In other words, he did a version of it too. So there's really a little interconnection there. So it's very, I have a big smile on my face as I think about this stuff because, at some point in time and space, I really hope that someone will begin to investigate how really spiritually positive and uplifting some of this music was. And actually, when I say it changed the fiber of sound, it really did. There were sounds that were manifested through the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix that had never manifested before then.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I have never heard anyone discuss the dynamics of the vibrational shift and the fact that Satchidananda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact that they coupled, that Woodstock had the whole spectrum, I think just gave it a really big, and I'm not, you know, I don't spend my time thinking too much about rock. It's just having seen that performance 25 years later, I was absolutely blown away. I went, my gosh, I hadn't thought of it that way. It was really good.
Yes, it's just...
It changed us all, Jonathan.
It did, you know, and to think that, you know, 500,000 people, it was the first, look, I must tell you that, that literally it was a field of light and love generated through sound, and people were walking around in a field of love at Woodstock. And I, you know, when I came home, I was literally blissful for weeks until it finally faded away, and I realized that what had been seen as a possibility there didn't really continue to exist once I got back home.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you know, we do a yearly training once again at Bella, you know, called the Healing Sounds Intensive. And for the 9 days there, we're in generating fields of light and love through sound. And it's very, very much like it. And there's nothing like being, in a place with, for us, it's 100 other, people, you know, generating the, you know, energy of love. But Veronica, miracles can happen then.
So do you recommend that, like, when we're working our way through this, which I will continue doing since I've gotten quite a bit of resonant expansion by working with your book and your CD, but would you recommend that people do it in groups in order to develop those fields? And
oh, well, you know, my great hope is that once they have developed and learned how to do it themselves, that then people will get together in groups and working. See, the original concept of prayer was to commune with the divine, mm-hmm. and that people will get together globally and do these global sonic prayers. And in the book, of course, the very last chapter has a graph from the Global Consciousness Project of Princeton, New Jersey, from our World Sound Healing Days, showing, if you like, the effect of self-created, intentionalized vocal sound being generated throughout the planet for peace and healing. So,
Shift the basic resonance of human consciousness all over the place, can't
I think we can change the fiber of reality. Look, I don't think that you, and I hope not too many of your listeners, would disagree mm-hmm. that we're, number one, going through fairly tumultuous times right now.
Uh-huh.
but also that the key to getting through these times is for us to wake up.
Yes, so that's really why it's called the shift, right?
I was gonna say, and you know, shift our frequencies to create a new paradigm. Ah, right?
Yeah, really.
That for me, the most powerful, you know, modality for doing this is intentionalized sound. I mean, Veronica, I've been doing this for 30 years. Yes, I was a musician. But I also, while I was studying the concept of using music for healing, I also studied things like acupressure, acupuncture, chiropractic, aromatherapy, this and that. I mean, you know,
you're really into the vibrational learning curve there.
Yeah, but, you know, I wanted to, you know, check it all out, and I found that sound was the easiest to teach and the most effective tool for creating shift and change, particularly shift and change in consciousness. So I'm not doing it simply because it's a good idea. I'm doing it because it's real.
Well, Jonathan, I think you need to tell people, even though this is in the book and that might spoil people's excitement and the mystery part, but tell them about going into the pyramid and how dark it was.
I love that. It's an interesting experience. And also, if you go to thedivinename.com, I just want to say that there are these wonderful pictures that are also in the book, but there are these aura imaging photos of me doing the divine name, and you can literally see almost this white cloud coming out of my mouth, and literally it envelops me. And they had never seen anything like that at the, from the guy who actually invented this aura imaging process, which is basically, if you like, an evolution of the Kirlian photography.
So this is whilst you were saying doing the intonations. I've got the page here.
And in the book, I happen to have the book in front of me. Otherwise, it's page 198.
Yes, I have it open.
And you know, that was just, and that happened actually after I had sent the actual manuscript into Hay House, and I was at this International New Age trade show, and somebody said, sit down, and, have your oracle photograph. I'm going, I don't want to have my aura photograph. Sit down, have your aura photograph. All right, well, listen, let's see what happens when I say this divine name, and I did, and they're like, do it again, and I did it again. They said, like, do it again, and I was like, okay, we got this, and they gave me these things. It was like, they'd never seen anything like that before, and I looked at it, and I said, wow. I don't know what this means because I don't like to, if you like, draw too much inference from anything, but I think it's very, very interesting. Cut back to 20 years before. No, probably not 20 years. It was 1987 from now. So that's 23 years ago, excuse me. Is that 23 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am in Palenque, Palenque, which is in Mexico, for the harmonic convergence. And for those people who know about the whole 2012 phenomena, which a lot of folks do, obviously, if you like, 2012, particularly December 21st, is if you like, the end of a vibrational wormhole, where but it began at something called the harmonic convergence. And a lot of people remember the harmonic convergence, which happened, I think, around August 16th or 17th of 1987. Veronica, I have never said this before, but I'm going to say it now.
Okay.
Do you know what else happened August 16th and 17th?
No.
Woodstock.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. So, talk about a convergence, huh?
Yeah. So here we are. It was like, you know, I'm in Palenque, and we are with a group of people we met while traveling, and there were probably about half a dozen people. And we basically, there was a guide who basically was taking us around Palenque at night, and he took us into this one temple underground that had not been open to the public. And I had somehow, in my meager broken Spanish and his meager broken English, communicated with him that I was really interested in sound healing. All of a sudden, he turns off the light and says, make sound. Well, I began to tone these vocal harmonics very much like the divine name, and the room became illuminated. And everybody there, it wasn't like a light went on, but you could make out in this pitch blackness, you could make out the images of different people's outlines there. You know, you could see them. And then I stopped making the sound. He turned the light, his flashlight back on. We continued on our way. And it was literally almost such a powerful experience that I didn't think much of it till I got back. And then I began to research this and found that in a lot of the ancient mystery schools that you would actually, the initiation would be given in total darkness and the initiate would need to be able to create their own light. And one of the reasons why this probably occurs is that one of the things that happens is that when we make self-created sounds, there are a lot of physiological benefits, just, you know, that have been, if you like, scientifically validated, including increased oxygen in our cells, increased lymphatic circulation, and increased levels of nitric oxide, which is a molecule promoter associated with healing and the endorphins, but also melatonin. And, you know, I think what happened was that I basically stimulated my pineal gland making the sound, which basically just caused this whole, biophosphorescent effect or bioluminescent effect to occur. It was pretty neat to experience.
And they say that people who are fully blind actually have light inside, you know, in their own consciousness, don't they? They have a lot of ability to perceive light inside.
Yes, one would think so, and then this brings in the whole concept of, well, will this type of sound work with somebody who's deaf?
Yes.
Totally. All right, so there you go. Because, you know, the bottom line is, and I'll just make this really quick, years and years ago I did a workshop teaching Bowser's mantras, and there was a woman who was totally deaf, and I said, you've got to come to this workshop. And I said, you know, I can't afford it. I said, you're my guest. I just want you to experience this. And she said, I'm deaf. I said, just come. So we did the workshop, and at the end of the workshop, she's crying. I'm going, oh, my. And I walked over, and she could read lips. I said, I'm so sorry. I thought that, you know, you'd experience something. And she said, and she's shaking her head. She goes, no. She goes, why hasn't anybody ever shown me the power of my voice before?
Oh, my. Oh, that's a very touching story.
Never told that story before.
It's a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with the 2012? How would you recommend it? What are you telling us?
Okay. So I think that, first of all, we have to be in agreement that these are pretty interesting times. I don't get into the whole fear mode. That's just not where I'm at. I'll say they're tumultuous and full of shift and change.
Yeah.
Most people will go, yeah.
I think the polarities are pretty strong.
And then I say, okay, most of the stuff that's going on is human created, including, from my perspective, even the weather conditions, just for example, because most of that stuff seems to be the result of global warming, which seems to be the result of human interference because of our technology. Would you not agree with that?
Mm.
Therefore, if humans created it, I think we can fix it. Now, here's the do. In many different traditions, there are, shall we say, higher levels of consciousness. There are abilities of higher levels of conscious beings. in the Hindu tradition, they're called siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S.
Right.
But they're called different things in different, but basically they're miraculous abilities, including teleportation and also weather control. Okay? Mm. Now, what if we as a species could get together and basically say, oh, wow, it's like really dry in this place, and it's really wet there, there's floods there, and this and that. Let's work with the energy of asking the, you know, the Earth Mother if it's in proper alignment to basically create these shifts and changes so that we can basically work with the energy patterns to balance them out. And, you know, on a level, this would be miraculous, but it just makes a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm just, you know, suggesting that perhaps for 2012, for us to, you know, reach a quantum level of evolution, we will need to be able to work together in group, which means that we need to work in cooperation, mm-hmm. and we need to work in compassion.
In harmony.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I just like to use the C's if I can.
Okay. You're
and
on.
And we need to stop being so competitive, and we need to stop consuming so much. Okay? In other words, and you say, why compassion, cooperation? Because compassion and cooperation are what create a, you're going to love another C, a coherent field between our heart and our brain. And when you have a coherent field between your heart and your brain, the heart actually puts out an electromagnetic field that is many times greater. It's been measured from being 500 to even 5,000 times greater than that of the field of the brain, and seems to be able to, if you like, interface with the electromagnetic field of the planet, the geomagnetic field.
Hmm.
So, this is, you know, and this is science, and this, I love it because it also makes sense. Okay, can our consciousness interface with the field and the consciousness of this planet? And the answer is yes.
Hmm.
The question is how? And from my perspective, it's number one, creating this coherent field through compassion, but also through working with sound. My friend Greg Braden in the Isaiah Effect talks about the power of prayer and about how prayer, if we can do prayer as something that we give appreciation for, gratitude, not coming from a condition of want or lacking or, you know, petitioning the Lord with prayer, as Jim Morrison of the Doors said, you cannot petition the Lord with prayer. Probably not, but you can really be in a state of thanks
mm-hmm.
and gratefulness, and this seems to really encode and amplify the power of prayer. And once again, there is a reason why most of the prayer on this planet is vocalized, is sounded aloud, and that's simply that sound enhances and amplifies the power of prayer.
I like that. So when you talk, okay, that was a lot of information, Jonathan.
Totally. I can't help it.
I love it. Vibrationally, I'm seeing sort of like these resonances possible that we're all in cahoots in
yes.
terms of creating a higher field that can take care of both prayer, consciousness, and being able to live in a win-win world, hey?
And this is why I was, if you like, given to bring down and manifest the divine name now. You know, when whoever it was said things have changed or whatever it was, things have changed, you know, literally I was watching Earth Day special and they, you know, on PBS and, you know, the shifts that we have created on this planet in the last couple of hundred years have been so monumentally, exponentially different than when humans have been on this planet for, you know, 200,000 years. The last 200, we have literally traumatized the energy field of this planet, and we can fix it.
Well, we haven't only been destructive. We've created, in some funny ways, with our crazy electronics, we've created the potential for a unity that is greater than ever before, right?
Well, very, very much so. And this is, you know, from my perspective, you know, once again, what I believe is that it's really, really important for us to, if you like, activate the global heart.
Yeah.
We have right now, through the internet, the global mind, the neural net.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do we create the global heart? And I was actually given this as a the answer to this is simply sound. In many different traditions, sound is the interfacing link between the heart and the mind, the body and the brain, if you like. And, you know, very, very many traditions. And, you know, you could say it's, you know, the throat chakra is the intermediary between the heart and the third eye, or the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I created something called Temple of Sacred Sound, which is a wonderful website. And if you go to the Healing Sounds website, healingsounds.com, which is our main big website that takes you to different places, it'll take you to templeofsacredsound.org,
mm-hmm.
which is the world's first interactive toning chamber.
Mm-hmm.
It's, Veronica, it's free. It's great. You don't even have, you know, this was, if you like, so altruistically guided that I didn't even, we don't even try to capture people's email addresses. Just go there, go on there.
So what happens? Do people make sounds into it?
Yeah, there are three different toning chambers. There's an Om chamber, an Ah chamber, and a U chamber, which are three of the major seed syllables on the planet. And there are these great geometric forms going on there, and you can plug a microphone in, and join in with the sound, but it doesn't much matter, because from my perspective, as long as you're making the sound with the intentionalization, you're adding to this process that I call global harmonization, which is basically bringing peace and harmony onto the planet using sound.
That is really, I'm going to do that. That's very exciting.
Oh,
and can people hear it? Can you actually hear what's going on there?
Totally. And if you want to hear yourself, please, you got to plug in a microphone.
Wow, this is very exciting work.
It's, all right, so I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I was talking to whomever I was given about 30 years ago. I was given actively the assignment of helping bring awareness of sound and music for healing onto the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to these beings or whomever it is, you know, maybe it's my higher self, maybe whatever, it doesn't matter. And I said, okay, it seems to me that awareness of sound and music for healing is now manifested on the planet. There are all these different groups and all these different gatherings that are beginning to happen. Is my work done? I'll be glad to go to Tahiti with my wife and take my guitar and just sit on the beach and, you know, strum it. And the reply I got was, no, we want you to continue working with personal healing sounds, but now we want you to shift your awareness and bring in the concept of global or planetary healing sounds.
Wonderful.
Which is why then, a couple of years later, we had the world's first World Sound Healing Day, which takes place on February 14th.
Great.
Valentine's
Day.
Right, and we send a sonic Valentine to the Earth Mother, encoded with love and compassion. What more can you want?
Yeah, this is very exciting stuff, isn't it? Do you feel that we're getting you're getting tremendous help from consciousness, from the other side?
Yes.
Right? Do you feel like seems to me that there's an awful lot of that going on right now to help us through this shift and help us to have the heart meet the heart of the earth and the heart of our minds as well, isn't there? What do you feel about that?
Hallelujah. Things have changed.
Yeah.
And
do you think they're up in the ante to help us, the consciousness?
You know, and it's interesting. I mean, I talk, if you like, and I'll make this really quick. You know, I talk about the fact that, yes, I've been getting tremendous, tremendous, tremendous guidance and help for a long time. And that's about as much as I like to talk about it. I don't like to particularly give. I do say, okay, I do work with a being by the name of Shamael, the angel of sacred sound, that is in Kabbalah also another name for Metatron, who is the angel of the Kether energy form. But, it's really interesting. I think that what is really great about the divine name and about working with sacred sound, period, but the divine name, as you activate, as you create this hotline to the divine, you're opening yourself up to higher frequencies of light and love through sound, and those higher frequencies of light and love through sound usually are encoded as information. And that information can simply be love. That we are all one can be something as simple and as dynamically important as that. The awareness, yes, be nice to each other. you know, the golden rule, you know, do unto others, is found in every tradition. The Dalai Lama says if I had one thing I'd tell people, it would simply be nice to each other.
You know something, as you're saying that, I'm going, it's sort of a beautiful, a loving instruction about releasing the past, isn't it? Get on with being these expanded, more conscious, more resonant, vibrant beings with directed by intention rather than what was.
Well, for one who has a paradigm shifter show, it certainly seems to me that this is a paradigm we ought to shift to, don't you?
You betcha, and I really appreciate the time you've spent with us. Quick, give your website so people can keep in touch, and I do recommend everyone, The Divine Name, The Sound That Could Change the World, is a wonderful it's a book, but it's so instructional. You'll be able to put it in your hand and listen to the CD and really get on with changing your vibration.
Thank you. So, thedivinename.com gets you to the major focal point. From there, you ought to be able to navigate throughout our whole website, which is healingsounds.com. Okay? And it's actually an award-winning website. What more can I say? So is Temple of Sacred Sound. What more can I say?
I'm very excited about that, too. Mm-hmm.
I am so grateful to your having me on here, and I just want to send blessings of light and love through sound to you and all your listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan. Many blessings. Good night, everyone.